A very good morning to you, Namibia. A very good morning to you, my dear listeners. Welcome to your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. And thanks for joining us. Thank you for choosing us. We see you, we appreciate you, and we love you being a part of Eagle FM family. Thanks for joining us. Our time is about 4 minutes past the hour of eight, and this is Unpacking the Day. And my name is Mike Oshoveri. So this is your daily dose of what is really going on in terms of business, in terms of economic news and political news. And every weekday, we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, trends and numbers that are making headlines. So we keep it clear and always curious, asking the questions that matter and giving you a fresh take on what people are saying out there. So the views shared during our segment don't necessarily reflect of those of Eagle FM. So we are here to unpack what others are saying, spark the meaningful conversation so that you can be part of the bigger conversation. So this is your space to unpack the headlines and get to the heart of the stories. So very good morning. If you just joining us, thanks for choosing Eagle FM to be in your company this morning. As usual, we start off looking at what happened on this day in Africa. So welcome to on this day in Africa. And today we are turning the clock back to June the 30th. It's a date that carries a lot of weight on the African continent. Now, let's start in 1960. It was on this day that the Democratic Republic of Congo officially broke free from the Belgium after more than 50 years of colonial rule. Patrice Lumumba stepped into the role of the country's first prime minister with Joseph Kasavubu as its first president. This was a massive milestone for Africa, and it is still celebrated today as Congo's Independence Day. So, and during that very same independence ceremony in the capital city of Kinshasa, Lumumba gave a speech that went down in history. He didn't hold back. He publicly called out the harsh reality of colonialism or colonial oppression and demanded dignity. Freedom, and the right for African to rule themselves. So to this day, that speech is remembered as one of the most powerful moments of the African freedom movement. 2 years later, on June the 30th, 1962, the wave of independence continued. Rwanda officially broke away from Belgian rule on this day. So now, if you look at the calendar, you will see Rwanda actually celebrate its Independence Day on July the 1st. That is just because the formal handover of power happened a day later, but the decision was made on the 30th of June, fitting right into the incredible bust of African nation taking back control in their early 60s. But not every June the 30th was a day of celebration. In 1989, Sudan experienced a dark turning point. A military officer named Omar al-Bashir led a coup that overthrew the country's democratically elected government. Now, Bashir went on to hold power for nearly 30 years until he was finally removed in 2019. It was a move that completely changed the course of modern Sudanese history. Finally, let's jump to June the 30th in 1966. Kwame Nkrumah, one of the most famous leader, one of the most famous leaders of the Pan-African movement, was awarded a Lenin Peace Prize. So he was given this honor for his lifelong fight against colonialism and his push to unite the African continent and keep the global peace. And that is your history lessons, I think, for today, from the fight for freedom in the Congo and Rwanda to political upheaval in Sudan and the global recognition of African leadership. This and that, and this has been On This Day in Africa. So, until next time. All right. Today is Tuesday, Tuesday, the 30th of June. So we actually saying goodbye to June today. Okay. June, this is your last day. So we saying goodbye to you. So now the thought for the day, the Nigerian proverb says, the children of the same mother do not always agree. It reminds us that even the people who love each other, people who love each other, most will sometimes see things differently. And it is normal part of, it's normal part of life and even within the family itself. So good morning, Namibia. Here is something worth thinking about today. Just because people disagree, it doesn't mean they have to become enemies. You know, brothers and sisters argue, parents and children don't always see eye to eye. Friends can have different opinions. That's part of being human. So the real test isn't whether we always agree. It is whether we can still respect each other when we don't. That's the real test. So imagine how much, you know, better, how much better our homes, our workplace, our communities, even our politics would be. Imagine how it would be if we spend less time actually trying to win every argument and more time try to understand one another. So today, remember this. You don't have to think the same to stand together. Okay? You don't have to think the same to stand together. Respect can survive disagreement. And sometimes the strongest relations are the ones that learn how to disagree without falling apart. So that's our thought for the day this morning. So welcome. So our time is 11 minutes past the hour of 8, and we're coming to you live from the Ondangwa studio. So I'll be with you until the hour of 10 o'clock. And when I will be handing over to Tate Franz in Windhoek. So what are we looking at today? What do we have on our menu this morning? So yesterday we had, we have the Villager, and there's a very interesting article in that, in yesterday's edition of the Villager. So the Namibian government has officially launched their revised national resettlement policy. So, 2023 to 2033. So, marking actually a significant shift now from a simple land allocation program to a comprehensive framework. And this framework is actually designed now to drive agricultural production, you know, job creation and sustainable rural development. So we're gonna go into that and really, you know, unpack this new revised national resettlement policy. There are issues that we need to look at. And also, the International Management Development, it's an International Management Development World Competitiveness Ranking. Namibia has slipped one place to 69th out of 70 countries in the 2026 the IMD World Competitive Ranking. So that's highlighting the highlighting the persistent economic challenges Namibia experiencing, including now limited financing for businesses, infrastructure gaps, and slow growth of our economy. So despite now the country's success in controlling inflations. So if we have time, we're going to go into that as well. Look at that ranking for Namibia. So, and of course, your participation is also part of the show. You will be, you are most welcome to unpack this with me. So we come back after this.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
When you choose UNAM,
you get credible accreditations.
You get internationally recognized qualifications.
You get a university with a growing reputation.
When you choose UNAM,
you get a head start on local jobs.
You become connected in a growing Namibia.
You stay in the best country in the world.
Because you already know, you love it here.
Open your mind to UNAM.
And UNAM will open the world to you.
UNAM is your university, Namibia.
Because the you in UNAM is you.
It's always you. Nobody else. It's always you. All right. Good morning. Good morning and welcome. Good morning, Eagle FM listeners. Welcome back to Unpacking the Day, your daily dose of straight talk about the issues that matter to you. All right. So one of the articles from yesterday's edition of The Villager by Peniambeko Jonas talks about the government's launch of what they are calling the revised national resettlement policy. A revised national resettlement policy. That means this has been there. So that means it has been there. It's just being revised. But what I want us to do is to look at what does this revised national resettlement policy actually mean? What does it mean for, let's say, for example, for a young Johannes in Oshakati with a degree in agriculture, but no land to farm. So what does this now revised national resettlement policy, how does that address the issue, the problem of Johannes in Oshakati with an agricultural degree but no land to farm? Or for a family, let's say for that family in Ngobabes, that has been waiting for 15 years for a piece of land, you know, they can call their own. So what does this revised national resettlement policy actually do for that family? So let's unpack it. Let's unpack this together. So now, so here is what the government announced last week, according to the article. According to the article, they have launched a new land policy. This is a new land policy for 2023 to 2020 to 2033. So the agriculture minister say this policy is going to transform land reform. It's going to transport land reform. Transform, not to transport. It's going to transform the land reform from just giving people land into something that create jobs, grow food, and develop rural areas. Okay, so now you see the transformation here. Okay, it's going to transform now transform the land reform from just giving people land into now something that create jobs, grow food, and develop rural areas. Nice word, beautiful speech when you listen to it. But Let me translate this from the political speak into a language you would probably understand. So, in fact, what the government is admitting is that the old way of doing things, which started back in 2001, it wasn't working. So when the ministers say we're going to transform land, now the policy is going to transform land from just giving people land into something that creates jobs, grow food, and develop rural areas, the government is admitting that the old way of doing things is not working. It wasn't working. For over 20 years, the government has been buying commercial farms and resettling people on them. Since independence, they have placed more than 5,300 families over 500 farms. That sounds very impressive, isn't it? It is impressive when you think 5,300 families on over 500 farms. But here's the problem. Here's the problem. Actually, nobody wants maybe to talk about it at the launch party. Nobody talks about that at the launch party. Most of those resettlement farms are not producing food. Most of those resettlement farms are not producing food. They are not increasing. Now, what do you see what they say? This policy reform will transform, a land into now something that creates job. So what we know is that most of those resettlement farms are not producing food. They are not creating jobs. Many beneficiaries are actually struggling to survive. They are struggling to survive those who are resettled on those 500 farms. Research by the legal assistants, by the LAC, and this affects not my opinion, okay? This affects not my opinion, shows that productivity on the resettlement farm has been poor. It has been poor. We are talking about overgrazing land, talking about poor farming methods, talking about people who were given land but not actually given the tool to make it work. So from what we know, on over the 500 farms that were many people, that 5,300 people were resettled, it's actually their beneficiaries. These beneficiaries are struggling to survive. And so, and therefore maybe the government now come up with, realize, as I said, it's an admitting that the old way of doing things, is not working. So we're going to go into that. So from the very beginning, understand that. Okay. So that's what I want you to understand, that that's an admission. It hasn't been working. We need to revise our policy. So now first, let's talk about the number. I told you always that numbers don't lie. So yeah. Right now in Namibia, so let's talk about reality now. So to understand this whole question of resettlement, so we need to understand sometimes, where we're coming from. Let's put everything in context. Okay? But let's talk about numbers. Now, right now in Namibia, white farmers who make up only about 6% of our population own approximately 70% of all commercial farmland. 70% of all commercial farmland. Meanwhile, blacks, Namibians, who are the vast majority, own only around 16% of agricultural land. 16% of agricultural land. Well, this is not a racial attack. This is not a racial attack. This is mathematics. Who like to say this is mathematics? Eh? Now, this is a reality. This is the legacy of colonialism and apartheid that we inherited in 1990. So, 36 years later, we still haven't fixed that. We still haven't fixed that. 36 years later, we still haven't fixed that. Now, the government target was, if you remember, the government target was to transfer 43% of commercial land by 2020. Okay? Did we meet that? Did we meet it? Nope, we haven't. Not even close. Not even close. 43% of commercial land by 2020. That was actually by 2020. So, we have already failed. So, as I said, did we meet that target? No, we didn't. Not even close. So why? Because the old system rely on, as you know, the old system rely on what? It rely on willing buyer, willing seller. Meaning, they could only buy land if a white farmer wanted to sell. That's the strategy. That's our strategy. Willing buyer, willing seller. It hasn't changed. So the reasons why we couldn't meet the 43% of commercial land by 2020 is because that's an old system. It relied on willing buyer, willing seller. And many of the white farmers didn't want it to sell. Many didn't want it to sell. Or if they wanted to sell, the prices the government couldn't afford. The prices was inflated. The government couldn't afford those prices. That's our strategy. That's why that's why nothing happened. That's why we couldn't reach that 43. We couldn't reach that target of 43%. Meanwhile, if you look at where we are today, youth unemployment in this country is sitting at around 38 to 43%, from 38 to 43%, depending who, on whose statistic you believe. So that means nearly half of our young people, between 15 to 24 years old, cannot find work. Half, okay. So these are young people with energy, with dreams, with nothing to do, and we have a land sitting there. Millions of hectares, you know, that could be creating opportunity for them. Now, so let's look at the revised policy is actually interesting. Maybe let's look at what is changing, okay? Please do follow the article. So if you haven't subscribed for the villager, make sure that you subscribe. All what you need to do is just, you sent a WhatsApp message to 08333 66, no, to 08, to 08 1 240 41 44, 08 240 41 44. All you need is just send your name and your email address. So, and then you're subscribed to receive the villager every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So make sure that you do that now, right now as you're speaking, as I'm speaking to you, so that you get your digital copy tomorrow. Make sure that you do that. So follow the story in the villager. So it's a very, very, very interesting story to read. So now, what is actually changing? Okay, so the government say this new policy is different. Let's break down what they are actually proposing. What are they proposing? And this is very interesting. This is something that now I want you to listen very, very, very carefully, because this is very interesting. Now, we're going to look at the changes that they are making. Some of them are very interesting and very important, I think. So now, change number one is from, okay, I would say this is now from, it's a kind of like a change. We are changing from charity to business. All right. What I mean is that the old system was basically, here is the land, good luck. Yeah, this is how the approach was. Yeah, here is the land and good luck. Now, the new system say, well, here is the land and here is training and here is access to the loan. Here is access to loans. And here is help finding market for your product. So you see, so it's proposing. So it's proposing that, you know, so we shouldn't just hand over the land and wish people good luck. So the new system says, okay, we will give you land, but then we will also train you. We will also make sure that you have access to loans. We help you finding the market for your product. And, you know, they are finally acknowledging what experts have been saying for years. And, you know, we had many land conferences and all this. So they're finally saying, you can't just dump people on the farms and expect miracles. They need support. They finally acknowledging that. So we continue with, this is the fact, that's number one.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
All right, welcome back. Yeah, we're looking at the new revised land resettlement policy. And we're looking at the new, what are the changes that are there. So the first change is that, you know, the government that have made, which is a very good, which is, this is something that expert, as I said, this is what expert have been saying anyway, you know, that, you cannot just, you know, dump people on the farm and expect miracle to happen. So they need support, okay? So they need access to loans. They need, you know, market for their products. So they need, you know, all this. And this has been already, these are things that have been discussed in many conferences, in many land conferences, and has been proposed. So it's not something that new. So it's just maybe really going back to the file and said, well, what was said? Okay. Let's challenge this. Let's see. Let's go through the challenge, but we're going to also look at, okay, we're going to also challenge some assumptions. All right. So change number two, the three tier system. There's a three tier system. Now, this is interesting. I think this is very, very, very interesting. So the policy now recognizes that not everyone needs, you know, your need. Not everyone needs, like, we have different farms, different farmers. Okay. So I think the policy now recognizes that not everyone needs or can handle the same type of farm. You understand? They have created now three categories. Okay. Because, not everyone have the same needs. So they have created three categories. So the higher economic model. So they have created a higher economic model for serious commercial farmers who want to run proper business. And then you have the moderate economic models. These are for mid-level farming operations. And then you have the lower economic models for subsistence farmers who mainly want to feed themselves, okay? They may not actually want to do commercial, but they just want to feed themselves. So those are the three-tier system, if you kind of put it that way. So, and this make a hell of sense. Okay, it make a hell of sense. It's like saying, you know, it's like saying, let's match the right person to the right size farm. You understand? Instead of giving everyone the same thing, regardless of their skills or resources. So we are going to match the right person to the right size of farm. So, and I say that's actually make a hell of sense. Okay. So you give maybe a family that they just want to do subsistence farming, but you give them a commercial farming, you know, and they don't have the resource, they don't have the skills. You understand? I think that's make a lot of sense. So, yeah, match the right person to the right size farm. So instead of just giving everyone the same thing, regardless where they are in terms of skill, in terms of resources. So I think that's another changes that comes in. The third change number three. Now this one is from renting to owning. Okay. They bring in this aspect now that, and maybe here this one is the big one. I think this one is actually the big one, my dear listeners. This is the big one. Under the old system, resettlement beneficiary got a leasehold rights. Okay? The lease, you are leasing, a leasehold rights. Basically, long-term renting agreement. Typically, it's always about 99 years. Okay? Now, the problem with that is that the bank wouldn't accept this lease as a collateral for loans. So you cannot go with that leasehold rights. You cannot actually go to the bank and ask for a loan. So you couldn't use your rented land to borrow money to buy equipment or improve the farm for that matter. It was catch 22. You understand? Now, the new policy says, okay, the new policy says, if you prove yourself as a successful farmer, you can eventually convert your leasehold to a freehold right. You understand? So that's the change. Meaning you actually own the land. Okay? And this is huge. It's absolutely huge. If it actually happens, but because ownership changes everything. You know, ownership changes everything. When you own something, you invest in it, you take care of it, you know, you think long terms, all these kind of things. Eh? You can use it now as a collateral. You know, it's huge, as I said. So that's one changes that comes in. You know, and the problem here, maybe we can look at this also. When you prove yourself as a successful farmer. Okay. So we're going to look at that maybe more in a little more detail. So, but this is one of the change. Okay. So I just want you to understand that that's one of the change. Okay. So, and I think this idea is being also thrown, you know, I think this idea is also being used in housing, you know, those proposal for housing crisis that we have. There's this idea that if you have been renting a house for, your renting becomes kind of installment for a certain period of time, you know, becomes like a premium. So, yeah. So I think that's a good idea. A very, very, very good idea. And, so let's quiet this. It's making a bit of where do I touch? All right, let's go to the change number four. Okay, change number four in this new policy. So the change number four is measuring success differently. They're looking at how to measure now success differently. Now, the minister said something very, very, very important at the launch. Okay? She said, and I'm paraphrasing, that we should stop counting success by how many farms we have given out. So that we should stop counting success by how many farms we have given out and start measuring whether those farms are actually producing food, creating jobs, and lifting people out of poverty. So this has been, the measurement of success has become different now. So previously, I think this is a massive admission also. Okay. That's also a massive admission that the old number game, was just political, was just politics. Look how many people we have resettled. And that's now without actually checking if their lives actually improve. This new way of looking at it said, well, this new way of measuring success is different. So it's not just, looking at how many farms we have given out, but start measuring whether those farms are actually producing food. Are they producing food? Are they creating jobs? Are they lifting people out of poverty? So this is a good, as I said, one, it's a massive admission that the old number game was just politics. You know, look now, many people, look how many people we actually settled. That was the only success. That was the measurement of success. How many people we have settled? I mean, resettled. So now there's a new way. There's a different way of thinking. Okay. So in the new reformed one, it's just looking at those farms. Are they actually producing food? Are they actually creating jobs? Are they actually, you know, lifting people out of poverty? Because that's the idea. Okay. So that's change number four. Okay. So yeah, basically, yeah, those are the changes that are in this new revised rent resettlement policy. So now let's go a little bit deeper and I think as I was looking through that, there are things that we need to question, okay, that are not very clear, because there are several things about this new policy that should worry you a bit, okay? Or at least they worry me a little bit. Okay? So now so when you look at that, my first question really is where the money coming from. So the money now to budget this. The policy, because the policy talks about, remember, the policy talking about training, talking about extension, you know, extension services, talking about infrastructure development, access to finance, you know. All of those things, believe me, all of that cost money. Serious money. Eh? Our economy is struggling. Remember last year, we just came out of drought. Last year, we just came out of the drought. The agricultural sector contracted by 18%. You know, it contracted by 18% last year, according to the African Development Bank. So, where exactly is the budget of all this support, inverted comma, going to come from? Where is it going to come from? Are we talking about real money here? Or are we just nice word on a paper? Well, that's a question I'm putting out there, you know. So the second question is, what about the farm that are already failing? So because the way you look at this, it look like, okay, the new, it look like that we're looking at the new acquisition that we're going to make. Okay. So, We have over 500 resettlement farms already allocated. Over 500 resettlement farms already allocated. Many of them struggling. As I said, from the LAC study, many of them are struggling. Okay? So Now, is this new policy going to burden those people and focus only on the new allocations? And remember what I asked. My first question was, where are the money coming from? So what's going to happen with the 500 resettlement farms already allocated? Are we going to now abandon them? Or is there a plan to rehabilitate existing farms? Because I will tell you this. Research shows that much of the land under resettlement is degraded. Degraded from poor management. And fixing that costs more than... Sometimes fixing those kind of things costs you more money than buying a new land. So fixing that will cost you more than buying a new land. So what are we going to do with those over 500 farms that are not producing? Now, the other things that we need to look at, I think another question is, who qualifies and who decides? The article, if you read the article mentioned a differentiated resettlement models. Differentiated resettlement models. Now, for different categories of beneficiaries. So, but let's be honest. Okay? If we are really, really being honest in Namibia, land allocation in Namibia has always been political. It has always been political. Who get connected? Who knows someone? Who filled out the right form? Whatever. Yeah. So the policy talks about being transparent and evidence-based. So, but we have heard that. The thing is that if you look at, you know, you go into those forms, I mean, to those, you know, document, that has been the topic, transparent and evidence-based. So we have heard that before. So where is the actual mechanism? What I'm asking now is, what I want to see is an actual mechanism that would prevent the corruption that has been going on, the favoritism that has been going on. So where's the mechanism, the actual mechanism? And going back now to the freehold, you know, promise. So maybe the question is, when exactly? When would you the path from leasehold, you know, from leasehold to freehold, it sounds great. Eh? I love that. It sounds absolutely great. But what are the actual criteria? Eh? What are the criteria? How many years of successful farming that I need to have on my back so that I'm regarded now successful to start actually owning that farm? What defines successful? So those are some of the things. What defines successful? And here's the problem. Now, what happened to the people who try hard? Let's say, for example, you have someone who's trying hard, but fail because of a drought, because of market crashes or something like that, or because of a lack of support. Do they lose everything? So, well, the policy, it doesn't give clarity on those, doesn't give detail yet on those kind of stuff. And these are the things that we need to work. Those are the criteria. What are the actual criteria? And the other thing also, it's what the minister mentioned. He mentioned actually climate change. So, which is actually a reality now. Okay. So the minister mentioned climate change in her speech, and she is actually right. She is right. Namibia is getting drier. Eh? Our country is getting drier. Farming is getting harder. Just imagine, for some of us, you probably have about 30, less than 30 goat and cattle together, you know. But you have nowhere, especially at this point in time, you have nowhere you can actually, it's getting harder actually to farm. Eh? Especially in certain area. Is this policy preparing now people for that reality? Now, when I'm thinking about this policy, And we're talking about climate change. And this is something we black people don't think about, even if we see it right in our faces. So is this policy preparing now people for that reality? Or are we still acting like it is 1980s? And the rain will come, will always come. That's our understanding. The rain will always come, but it has changed. Because if you give someone land in an area that is becoming desert, I think you haven't helped them. Now, looking at now, if you're giving people an area that you know in 10 years or 20 years, it won't be, you know, you haven't helped them. You actually just set up them, you set them up for, to fail. Eh? You set them up to fail. So those are some of the things that we really need to, for this new revised policy, I think that we need to think about. All right. So 49 minutes past the hour of 8. That's our time. And you're most welcome also now to come through. And so before we continue, I'm going to continue. There are other things that I need to look at this. When we come back, why actually this actually matter to you. All right. So that's what we're going to look at.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back. So now let's take a step back. Let's take a step back for a moment. And because I need you to understand why land sometime, especially for Namibian. So why land get Namibians so emotional? Okay. Why do we get emotional about land? You know, when the Germans colonized this country starting 1884, actually, they took land by force. Okay. The Herero, the Namas, the San communities, who lived on this land for generations in those areas, especially were removed. I'm talking about who are now removed by force, you know, were driven off, killed in genocidal numbers and forced into reservation. Okay. Now then South Africa, the South African government, the South African took over during the apartheid and continued the same system. Now, follow what I'm saying. By the time we got independence in 1990, the damage was done. Okay? The best agricultural land was in white hands. Black Namibians were crowded into marginal area called homelands. Okay? Remember the history where in the homelands where the soil was poor and the rainfall uncertain in those areas? So when we talk about land reform today, we are not just talking about economics, all right? We are talking about justice. And that should be very clear. We're talking about justice. We're talking about dignity. We're talking about correcting historical wrong that has left deep scars across generations. And the minister said itself, she herself said this. And she said, I'm quote unquote, land represent identity, heritage, belonging, and livelihood. Unquote. She absolutely, absolutely, absolutely right. But here's my question now. And this is a serious one for every one of you listening now. After 36 years of independence, after multiple policies, after billions spent, why are we still having this conversation? Why are we still having this conversation? Why does the statistics still show 70% of the farmland in the minority hands? Yeah? Why still the statistics show that 70% of farmland is still in the minority hands? Why? Why hundreds of thousands of Namibians still waiting for land? After 36 years, that's a serious question that we need to ask ourselves as a nation. So, now, that's just for you to think about, really. Why are we still, this still a problem? You know the answers. Eh? So, I have read the research. My dear listeners, I've read the Legal Assistance Center has done existing studies on this, and the Namibian University of Science and Technology has published papers as well, and agricultural organization have been advocating for years. Okay, now there are consensus. Their consensus are really, really, really clear. So, what are the things that really are agreeing on? So one of that is tenure security. That's tenure security matters. You know, farmers who feel secure in their land rights invest more and produce more. If you own that land, you invest more and you will produce more. So that's one consensus that's very clear. Another consensus is that support services are non-negotiable. So this is now we're looking at this now in relation to the revised policy. So, which is also including that support services are non-negotiable. Without training, without credit, without market access, land reform failed. Yeah? And this is one of the things that I was telling you. What have changed? What are the changes that are in the new policy reform? Okay, so one of these is that support services are non-negotiable. So you have to train people. You have to people must have access to loan. They must support. Eh? So they must be supported. They must have access to market. Eh? Otherwise, as we have failed in terms of land reform, those were the ingredients that we didn't pay attention to. What we did is just say, okay, there's the land. See what you're going to do with yours. See what you're going to do. Yeah? And we said, hey, how many have we resettled? Yeah? So that's a new thing. Now the other, I think the consensus is also that one size fit all doesn't work. You know that one size fit all, it doesn't work. Different farmers need different types of support. That's another consensus. All right? That one size fit all, it doesn't work. And that also has been now recognized in the revised policy. And also the other thing is also patience. Patience is required. You know, you can't turn someone into a commercial farm overnight. Eh? So it's gonna take some time. All of this, is now supposedly reflected in the new policy. Okay? And I'm saying supposedly. So that is actually, because I'm being a little bit, I'm still skeptical a little bit. You know, I'm being skeptical because the reason why I'm being skeptical is because we have heard these promises before. So we have heard this promise to go. Now, the 2001 policy also talks about support services. If you go to the 2001 policy, it talks exactly the same thing. It talks about support services. So it also talks about training. It's not new. It talks about training. It talks about making people productive. And yet, here we are, 23 years later. Here we are, 23 years later, launching another revised policy because the first one didn't deliver. The reason why we have this revised policy is because the first one didn't deliver. The 2001 policy didn't deliver. And it has exactly the same thing. Support services, talk about training, all those things. Yeah? Making people productive. That's why I'm being skeptical, why I'm still actually skeptical. So, now, let's be very direct about this whole thing, okay? Let's be very, 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 very direct. Now, the biggest obstacle the land reform in Namibia has, it has never been policy, okay? When you think of the obstacle to the land reform, it has never been policy. Policy, there are a lot of policy. There are a lot of, you know, and it has never been, you know, it's never been about not knowing what to do also. We know what to do. We have known what to do for many years. Okay? We have known what to do for many years. Do you know what are the problems? Do you know what are the obstacles? And sometimes we don't talk about it. Even in the new, that's the first question I have actually asked. Yeah? You remember when I was asking questions that these are the things that we need to look at. Yeah? As I said, we have known what to do for years. We know. Believe me, don't think that people don't know. But what are the obstacles? What are the issues? One, for me, money. Buying land and supporting farmers is expensive, my friend. It is expensive. So that's why we dump them on the farm and make sure that, you know, and see what you can do for yourself. Eh? Buying land is very expensive. And remember, willing seller, willing buyer, willing seller, it didn't work because it's expensive. Eh? It didn't work. So, and when you buy it, you know, it is expensive to really, and we can see this from our schemes. Just to make, these are now government backed schemes struggling to produce and to survive. Yeah? What about the just people that you actually put on the farm and expect them now to produce? So that's one obstacle. One obstacle is buying. I mean, it's money. Okay? It's really buying land and supporting farmers. It's expensive. No matter what. We can even have this. That's what I'm asking at the beginning. Where are the money going to come from? We can have this revised and have all this nice stuff. And it's really, really addressing what we need to address. And that's why I said, we never been not knowing what to do. You understand? It's not that we don't know what to do. It's not that the governors know what to do. We always know. These are the obstacle. Money. The other thing is capacity. Does the government have enough skilled people to implement this properly? It has been 23 since 2001. You know. But what have we implemented in terms of when it comes to the land? Yes, we resettled people. We bought farms. That's an easy thing to do. But are those, as we said, there are studies that have made, those farmers are not productive. Eh? Not many of them. Majority of them. So that's another thing that we need to. So does the government have enough skilled people? to implement this properly. If they had, we would have been, you know, we would, situation would be different by now. And there's another big, big, big obstacle. Another big obstacle is resistance. And you can think of that in many ways. There are powerful interests that benefit, you know, the powerful interests that benefit from keeping land ownership the way it is. And that's a fact. There are resistance and there are powerful interests. As I said, there are powerful interests that are benefiting from this, from keeping the land ownership skewed as the way it is. So those are the obstacles. Those are some of the things why where we are. And the other thing is continuity. Okay? Continuity in terms of every minister that comes, you know, in different administration, they come up with their policies. Yeah? There's always policy change with the minister. But land reform need consistency over generation. You know, we need that consistency. It's not every minister that comes up, have a different policy. Yeah? So what we see here is that the new policies address the technical problem. You know, the how of the land reform. At least that's addressing that. So the how of the land reform. But it doesn't solve the political and economic problem. The political and economic problem is the will we actually do it? That part, eh? Will we actually do it? That part it doesn't address. Let's get to the caller. A very good morning to you.
Yes, Big Mike.
Good morning, man.
Yes, morning.
How is the morning? Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
You are disappeared a little bit. I can hear you now.
Oh, I think it was the network.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, how is the morning?
So far, so good. So far, so good. It's a Tuesday morning. Yeah.
As good was that one of our African countries progressed.
I haven't watched. Who actually played? I didn't watch the last games. Who won actually?
Morocco.
Oh, Morocco.
The Netherlands.
They have beaten Netherlands?
Yeah, on penalty.
Oh no, I didn't check that one. Yeah. So I didn't even check the result when I came in. Yeah. Okay, no, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's a good one. There's a lot of surprise also. Paraguay beat Germany.
Yeah. Imagine. Yeah. So yeah, Germany's out. Netherlands is out. Wow.
Out. Yeah. Maybe next time we had I think imagine. Maybe today we'll be surprised also if kept that.
If surprises are like that, so it gives everybody encouragement that you can make it, you know.
Exactly.
A one game, it doesn't matter how you play, whether you just, you know, put up a wall against your goal.
I'm telling you, yeah, our goal.
And then wait until you go to penalties, you know.
I'm telling you. It doesn't matter how do you win it.
You know, it doesn't. When it's only one game, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Put everybody in the goal, you know.
Yeah, Mike, about the new strategy of the Minister of Friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it will work because since we have a competent person now, I'm also wondering if this minister, I mean, the land is also falling under the Honorable Sangwasa.
No.
Oh, it's an agriculture.
Also fall under there.
And then it's, I think, a little hope.
When it comes to the urban land, I think there's a difference, when it's come to urban land, but you also have the commercial farm and the communal land. Those are outside of him. Those are outside of his jurisdictions.
And then it's, I don't think there's hope for us. Because we talk, if it was Sangwasa who was in control, because now it's more even to trust a person than the organization. For me, if it was Sangwasa who was dealing with it, we say yes. But for us, we've been doing that. And we've been talking about it for so long. Nothing. Nothing has come. You can see that it materialized. Nothing. I'm telling you, how many times we talk about that? You know, Agribank is about to even to find these people who are getting the settlement. And again, on top of that, if you check the people who have been resettled, are the people who are already having money? And who are turning the productive farming to charcoal. Which I think for us, I think it would be better if we start grouping the youth. Like now what we do with NYC, where we are taking them to for security training only. If we can start doing that in the agriculture way.
Exactly. So why wouldn't have... The other thing is be able to have, you know, a farm that are just, you know, operational farm where you can say, this is where people go and work. You understand?
I'm telling you, and at this, you know what, I think, since we have even a green scheme, I think what we need to do as a government, we need to start doing it on commercial way, where we invite universities. That's why now you are learning in Gubungubu.
The other thing I was discussing with somebody, you know, politicians, said, why don't we, and this is originally one, I said, why don't we have most of the area guys are planning just to make, you just want to develop towns, you know? Why don't you make certain field that we have already kind work for food or something like that, you know, programs. You know, you make these people where they come and work. One, they get paid, you know, per work that they do. And they get actually food, you know, from the farm, from exactly the farm that they're working on. So one thing you produce for your own, for whatever your constituency, and the other thing is that people are not sitting at home. You have a number of people now who can come and work there.
Come work.
You know, getting paid per day. You can pay them per day or even at the end of the month, you know. So, and then you're producing food. You're producing actually, you know, products for your own constituency. It's not something that you need now. You're going to say, if it becomes more, you can sell it now to the market in your constituency. There are schools, there are, you know, hospitals, there are clinics, there whatever. You know, you target what is in your constituents, your constituency.
And that's how you encourage even people to do more.
Exactly.
Because the moment that you even sometimes they produce, but there's no market for them.
Yeah. You make it a law that in our constituents, what we produce in our constituency goes to the market in our constituency.
And that is what I think we've been not talking about, where we are producing. Some are doing in scale farming, producing enough to feed even the community. But their community are not accepting those products because they already frauded with this cheap one from all over.
That's why I said the obstacle to this whole thing, there are a couple of things, money, capacity, but the one thing is also resistance. Resistance that there are powerful interests that actually benefit from keeping the land owner, the land, the way the whole thing is, you know?
It is. That's why I'm saying no. For me, you know, even for, we can talk about this one, like even the way the other people are producing eggs. Just imagine if you are having eggs from the who are producing like on Oshkoto.
Yes.
Why should you take an egg from Windhoek to come to Oshkoto if Oshkoto is having enough?
Yeah.
Because remember one thing now, we are talking about sometimes the value and we are talking about even the cost. Maybe in Oshkoto, the egg to be more expensive a bit.
The whole strategy that NAB use, the Namibia Agronomic Board uses.
Yeah.
When they have enough, produce in Namibia, they stop the import from South Africa.
Yeah.
Okay. Now it actually should be operating similar structure,
yeah,
operate locally. That means when we have enough locally, you know,
yeah,
nothing should come from outside. And it should go from constituency to the region to the,
yeah,
you know, like that. Eh? So that if we have enough in a constituency, what the produce in the constituency should supply to the market in a constituency. If we have,
yeah,
enough in the region, the produce, the farmers in the region should actually supply for the region, you know, and unless we don't have enough, that's where we then order from outside,
from
outside. Yeah?
Mike, that is a strategy which is supposed to be used to our Namibian government.
Yeah.
Because you cannot tell me you are allowing the product from somewhere else to come and compete with Namibian products. Will you know yourself even that they are more advanced when it comes even to technology or how the way they are farming.
Yeah.
And now you are already, this business is not going to grow because the competition sometimes even is product to end up like where we have come from.
Yeah, you're gonna give up. Because there's no market. There's a cheaper thing, as you said. There are something cheaper. You know, something coming from Brazil or South Africa is far cheaper than what this person have produced. Yeah. So that's why I said money. The another obstacle is money. Where we are, our farmers are not supported. You know, at different level, whether the small scale or large scale, they are not supported. They are on their own. Eh?
And Mike, I think we have it just yesterday when I'm saying, sometimes if this guy's been benefiting for the government for more than 10 years, sometimes government to start looking somewhere else to give somebody else a chance. Because you have people who have been benefiting in those tenders for more than even 20 years. But you can tell this person never built anything. Even his people who are working for him, or just two people,
yeah,
you never increase him in the capacity. But every year is the one who's getting those tenders.
Yeah, no, that's a reflection.
People who are competing. Hmm?
That's a reflection of what inequality in they're talking about, the inequality that we talk about in Namibia. So
exactly,
the reason why we are second or first in the world,
mm-hmm,
that's exactly what the problem is. Yeah.
Which is true. Because now you are just recycling one person every time.
Yeah.
And now we have people who are having a good idea to maybe, because this is, when I'm looking at tender, it's kind of empowerment.
Yeah.
And as a person who you are having a great mind, you can make it out of that tender, even one tender which you get. Because we are talking about millions. And millions in Namibia is a lot of money, can change even the whole community.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, we have people who are like that, been benefiting, but you can see nothing they build in the community. Nothing. They cannot even give it a ball to kid to play.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot even come up with something like, no, I'm building this. Even the church, I will put this. So you guys, I will lay the foundation,
yeah,
so we can build the church or anything. Or because the moment you build the church will also come with a what?
Or maybe just a home, or just a community hall, you know?
Even community hall, yeah. Because the moment you build something like that, people are coming up with a kindergarten, you know.
Yeah.
There are so many. Even people are willing to wedding, they can come learn the hall.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a thing I think what we need to do, to start thinking of, like when you're empowering people, I mean, giving tenders out of these people. And the thing is that, Mike, when you look at our agriculture, when really we are doing bad. And I'm telling you, we are, because now we feel like we are okay, we are safe, as long as we are getting aid from South Africa. But that is not the way we support. Us, we come from the north. We know exactly what our slogan. The moment, like this time, we already like, after we cultivated the white mango and everything, we are cleaning the field for the next harvest, which will be next year. But we can come up with why we need changing the method the way we do things. Instead of waiting in the lane, at least we have a borehole and whatever.
Yeah.
What I want is people to be given a chance of who would start the agriculture.
Especially but the other thing is that the other things that we need to recognize is that, you know, even the climate change is actually changing, and we don't seem to pay attention to that. I'm talking about myself, where if I look at where I am at the moment in terms of the small stock that I have, small livestock, mm-hmm. and I have, I'm finding it difficult actually even keeping. I'm looking of other things to feed them, you know, rather than, because there's no way when you get everything is dry. Like now, you're already thinking of what am I going to buy, the feed, and buy.
Why even we never keep a big livestock is because you know yourself, you cannot maintain. That's why, the moment you give them, you cannot do what you're going to feed with them, the less. That's why you have to sell, so you can give that money, then that money you can use it for the one which you can keep.
So, but then the question is that, do we have people that think that far? We don't, eh? In terms of our planning, of our priority, of our developmental goal, we lack that expertise and that capability, eh? And that's a problem.
Serious.
Yeah.
We need to start thinking out of box, man. We cannot just, but the problem at the sake of always, they are coming up with a new trust strategy, and they are just talking. There's nothing. If you check even the extra dam, how long would they been talking about it? But there's nothing going on the ground.
How many times you have all this policy, something is being launched? It's launches, 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 launches.
And they're wasting money on that process.
It's always launches. You hear this has been launched, and nobody actually come up and said, oh, look how we open a factory, you know, look at how we open, you know, a processing plant. Look at how we, you know, that's what you want to see.
I'm telling you. Anyway, Mike, let me give other people a chance.
All right, thanks for coming through, man.
All right.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's what we want to see, We don't want to launch us anymore. So we want to see all the time. Now we want to see, okay, there's a processing plant being opened somewhere. There is there's a factory open somewhere. There is a agricultural project being opened somewhere. Or, you know, that's what we want to see. No launches, policies. We need policies. You know, like if you look at this policy trying to address, you know, it's really something that you say, wow, okay, if that happens, it will bring a lot of difference. It will actually make a difference. It will bring a transformation, you know. But would it happen? And this is exactly what I'm asking. As I said, what this new policy addresses, it addresses the technical problem, the technical problem in terms of the how of the land reform. But it doesn't solve the political and economic problem. The will we actually do it part. Will we actually do it? We can have the how. This is how we're going to do it. And much of the, when you listen to many of our politicians, much of the address is how. They always address the how. It's not the will we actually do it. Eh? You don't hear much of, okay, next year, this is what we're doing. Even listen to the sonar, the, what the regional addressing and whatever, eh? The regional, state of address. When you listen, just listen to those things. Much of them is the how, not the we will actually do this. You understand? That's a difference. Eh? The how I can do it. Eh? The how, even myself, I can do it. Because I know what we need to do and how we can do it. But the question is, will we actually do it? The reasons why we have so many policies that are not implemented or priorities that haven't been implemented, because we haven't solved the whole, you know, part, the part of will we actually do it? Eh? And there are problems. There are obstacles. Some of the obstacles are the things that I'm listing here. It's money. Eh? We're broke. Eh? As a government, we're broke. Okay? We are broke. Okay? So secondly, capacity. Okay? Resistance. And this is a reality within resistance. There are a lot of, you know, you may have now, on a level, well, on a political level, you may have actually someone who want to make changes. Okay? Even the policies are, you can see the policies that are being revised. You can see that someone maybe want to make changes. But there are resistance. That's why I said there are obstacles. How do you address those obstacles? Eh? They are whole question of continuity. Hmm? So the other thing, now I know what some of you are thinking actually when I was talking about, you know, okay, you're probably saying this horse is just attacking white farmers, earlier things that I was saying earlier. Let me be clear. That's not what I'm doing, okay? I'm not attacking white farmers. Now, white commercial farmers in Namibia produce the majority of our food. Believe it or not, the majority of our food, okay, are actually produced by white commercial farmers, you know? So one thing is that they have knowledge. They are not called boor for nothing, okay? They are not called boor for nothing. Yeah? They have knowledge, infrastructure. They have infrastructure that they have built up for years. They have connection that took generations to build. You understand? So if we drive them off the land through chaotic land reform, eh, we will starve. We will definitely starve. We will have 100% reliant, dependent on South Africa. The reason why we're not 100% reliant is because we have some commercial farmers, which are white. So just look at what happened in Zimbabwe. Hmm? Look what happened in Zimbabwe. So the question is not, should white farmer lose their land? The question is, and this is a very important question, how do we create a space? How do we create space for black Namibians to participate meaningfully? Now, underline the word meaningfully. To participate meaningfully in a commercial agriculture while maintaining food security. That's the question. That's the question. And I said to participate meaningfully in a commercial agriculture, because for now 70% are actually white. How do we then create now the space? And I'm saying, how do we create a space for black Namibians? Those who are capable, those who are willing to participate meaningfully in a commercial agriculture. So, while maintaining, as I said, food security, because you don't want to disturb that. Some white farmers have already, and I have some friends, well, white farmers who have already sold, you know, you have some white who have actually sold their land willingly. Others are willing to also to mentor emerging black farmers, you know. And there are partnership models that could work. that could work, where I would say expertise meet the opportunity. Very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Bom dia, meu primo, minha família.
Bom dia, como está?
Ah, tudo bem, obrigado. Oh, you are coming well, eh? I like it.
Eh?
You are getting it well, I like it.
Yeah, bro, how's this morning, man?
I don't know, the morning is good.
Okay.
I want also to participate on this issue of the, what I think about.
Of the land issue?
Yeah, land issue and everything, you know? So the question is like, okay, the system is there? Yes. The answer, yes, the system is there. Is the system universal? No, not universal.
Yeah.
The system is supporting you, supporting the elite who already enjoy the system. And those are the people who forget where they come from.
Yeah.
You know? Your parents, they fought for this country without no education. They went to everywhere to fight to this country to be liberated.
Mm.
But now, when they come back, they create even school for you to study. You went to school, you study, you got your degree. What are you contributing to the country?
Yeah.
Instead of investing the country.
Can you just hold on for a few seconds? Eh? Just
all right,
coming up quickly. Yeah.
Imbaya rire ombwa nai epetla weda ko ombunikiro ombe ombiho kusha. Njiviro yoye irire ombupu ohatane na wina ikare no masa kumurungu wa indu. Warire ongere kusha umune ondengu okura kwe imba. Una ovyu media peke ko londola mirongo itatu na hambu umwe. Kwao kika ovingi mokukara norupa ondando ya peke yukianja oshimariva. Owa peresente dano kumyeze vitatu moshimariva. Owa peresente umurongo kumyeze hambu umwe moshimariva. Owa peresente umirongo ivari na dano. Pamiyede ya mwurongwa na vivari moshimarifu. Nitoororela ondengu, jima yu ungura na wakove na wina onyanukife. Asheyesho imba ya kupeo shimariva shishihina omarifiro. Imba o maoronga neno uyeru haka enina. Itako na wina rishangika jinoni.
All right. So welcome back. Yeah, so, okay.
Mm. This is the problem. Now, you think about it. If the party I am not doing the right way, I'll tell you, no, here you are not doing well.
Yeah.
Now, let us go to our government. Why people up to date, they're still grabbing land? Why? Because the system is too slow, just catering for the elite.
Yeah.
People they get frustrated, then they go to grab land by force, not by choice, by force, because they don't have other options.
Mm.
The government is too slow. So the system which is created to advocate for this, all of these small problems we have, they are not totally universal. It's just supporting the elite which already enjoys this kind of system.
Yeah.
Do we have money? Do we have money or not? Yes, we have money. So, but who are enjoying this freedom? You know, people they try to forget where they come from. There was an issue when a few weeks ago about the Minister of Education saying no, people must go to the online to apply for school. My brother, we have people who live like, let me say, in Havana, but your son or your daughter studying in town. And by the way, you don't have enough money for yourself to go to work. That's why we have these speed hampers in the highway. Chinese, you work for Chinese. How much your salary? 800 or 1,000 plus minus. No, the system needs to be up to date.
Yeah.
Now, if you think about our agriculture, what we are really, all of these years, what did we do? And instead of supporting the new entrepreneurs, no, you are supporting the elite, which are there, which are, you know, just imagine that in mind.
Mm.
I'm a new in the system of agriculture or in the business or whatever kind of thing I'm doing. I never then participate on these things. You put me with the France Indong. How do I compete with this guy?
But the other thing is that, I mean, the point you're making is that we have even political, elite that have acquired farms that they are not producing anything from those farms. So instead of maybe making those farm, you know, have the youth that have studied, you know, agriculture, are given those farm and come up with their innovation or whatever the case may be, you know, to produce for the nations, you know?
Yes.
But we have individuals who own farms that they don't produce anything anymore.
There's only one chicken and 10 workers.
Yeah.
No, but
one chicken and 10 workers.
10 workers, yes. And this farm is not even supporting the country. Now, they are happy to buy food from South Africa. They are not even competing with this South African Custom Union to say, no, guys, you are kind of putting us down. We want also to grow, to be independent. No, yeah. They are happy to buy food from South Africa. So, until when are we going to go like this? But, you know, my brother, we have people, since independent, they don't know even to own a toilet, to own your own tap of water, to own a room, don't know.
We will find out one, you know, I don't think we have learned anything from COVID yet, you know, and we haven't learned something from COVID yet. And we will find out, I hope not, you know, and we hope not, but we will find out one day, you know, when something will happen and a restriction happen like it was done with COVID, where now you don't get anything from outside the country, from outside of your country, what would happen? If that happened, what would happen? We will die, literally die. You understand?
You know, yeah? What you touch there, the only thing you learn from COVID is working from home and having meetings online. That's what you learn from COVID-19. But in that time, when the border closed, the government trying to come up with money, where they get that money from? So no, today you tell me you don't have money. No, we have money. Maybe we don't know how to manage ourselves or maybe to control the system. I feel sometimes so frustrated when I think about this issue of the land issue and the agriculture. We are so behind and we cannot even produce whatever to uplift ourselves and we have kids who are coming from university. They go to the same system and they come to, you know, they forgot where they come from. They go and put pressure in the system to come and kill and put the low income in the same level.
Yeah.
How can you understand now? Since from 1996, 90, whatever, now up to date, we don't even some location with no water, no electricity. But our municipality is happy to tell you to say, I'll come to your location and I'll cut the power off. If you have power illegally, I'll fine you. We must stop that this kind of nonsense, because one day we get tired of this thing, there will be a problem. Because I get electricity to minimize my problem to my daughter or my son to study in the way, even to watch TV, even to buy fresh food to enjoy myself. But you come and cut me. Instead of giving me solution, you come and give me stress.
How do
you understand that, my brother?
Yeah.
No. The system is there, and the system is not universal, and the elite is already enjoying. They're still enjoying. So we want a solution. We can make a win-win solution situation. Even I don't have, I want to have a system which I can also do my own thing. You know, I don't have to wait for a government. No, what I need is a system which a clear road. I want my own place, like my earth. I get my place, I have my electricity, I have my water. I will know how to deal with that. I know how to pay my to municipality. By the way, I'm already contributing to the economy of my country, because I'm paying this water and electricity.
All right, man.
You know? Thank you.
And thanks for coming through,
All right.
Away 3366091. Away 3366091. We come into you live from the Ondangwa studio. All right. So, we can bring in the youth here as well. You know, where do the young people fit in? You know, with nearly 40 to 44% of youth unemployment, land reform should be a central, and which is actually the government, the current government, put this as a central strategy for creating opportunity for young people. So it should be. you know, a central strategy for creating opportunities for young people. So we have that in record. We have that in policies. But is it working? Yeah? The policy mentioned youth unemployment as one of the challenges it addresses. Okay? But let's get specific. Let's get specific. How many resettlement farms have gone to people under 35? How many resettlement farms have gone to people under 35? So how many young people with agricultural training are actually getting land? Now versus political connected people over 50. Now compare that. Eh? Compare that agricultural, you know, young people with the agricultural training, you who, how many of them are actually getting land? Compare now versus political connected people over 50. If you compare that, you will see. Yeah? So I'll tell you what young people are saying. They are tired of hearing about land reform that never reaches them. It never reaches them. They see the same faces as who was saying that, you know, the caller was just saying that. See the same faces getting benefit while they queue up for years. You queuing up for years and for years. Eh? They see land given to people who don't farm, who don't farm it productively. Yeah? While they have actually skills and energy, but no access. Yeah? We're talking about those who are coming out of universities who have skills and energy. But where's the access? That's where we are. So if this new policy, it doesn't prioritize youth with real target, and we're talking about now real target here, real quotas. Eh? We need real quotas, real fast tracking for qualified young farmers, you know. And then it is just more than, it will be just more of the same thing. You understand? It will be just more of the same thing. Nothing changes. Just you revise, you know, to make it more maybe modern, to look at more today's need. But if it doesn't really addresses the issues, monetary-wise, you know, and other challenges that I talked about, it's just more of the same thing. All right? So we talk about climate. I think that... I need to say something that, you know, in terms of this, because not all land, you know, is worth redistributing anymore. No, seriously, I think not some land, climate change is reshaping Namibia. Okay. We need to understand that climate change really reshaping Namibia. Areas that could farm 30 years ago are becoming semi-desert. You understand? Water tables are dropping, rainfall patterns are unpredictable. You know, if the government is buying, let's say for example, if the government is buying a land for resettlement based on old map, eh? If they are looking maybe at some old map and old assumptions, okay, that would be the right word. So they might be setting people up for failure. Eh? So we need climate smart land, what is the word? Land reform. Yeah? So that's what we need. Yeah? The climate smart land reform that ask, will this land still be farmable? Is that an English word? Will still be farmable in 20 years? Can I still farm here in 20 years? Before you actually put people on it, before you resettle people there, do we have this climate smart land kind of reform that looking at 20 years from now, would this land be still farmable? The policy also mentioned climate change, which is actually good. But So, but, um, but is it just lip services? Okay. Is it just lip services or are we actually going to reject land that's becoming unfarmable? I'm not too sure whether that's English. Okay. So are they going to invest in irrigation, drought resistant crop, water harvesting technology? Yeah. Because this, okay, because that is what 21st century agriculture look like in Namibia. That's how we should look like. Yeah. Minutes past the hour of 9. Yeah, so now let's look at this now. I'm reading through everything, okay? And studying the history and looking at the numbers and here's my honest before we get out of it. So I see that there's a good, and I'll actually divide it into three, okay? There's the good, and then there's the concerning, okay? What is concerning? And actually there's something missing, okay? So about this policy. So let's look at what is good, okay? The good is that finally the policy acknowledges that the land allocation alone doesn't work. I think that's a good thing. That's something that we found. It also recognized now different farms have different needs. That's another thing. That's also something that is very good. The other thing is the leasehold to freehold pathway. Okay. So that could be very transformative, honestly, if implemented properly. If that, and it's a big if, you know, in a capital letter. So if that implemented properly, that could become really transformative, you know, leasehold to freehold pathway. So the other good thing is the focus on outcome, you know, productivity and job. Because previously it was just, you know, how many resettlement that we have made, how many people that we have resettled on the land, how many farms that we have bought. It was never the outcome, you know, productivity, jobs, reduction in terms of poverty. So that focus on outcome rather than on input, number of farms allocated or something like that, I think that's also a good thing. That's something that is good in the new policies. So, and the other good thing is actually in the new policy is that brings land reform into conversation with a broader economic development goal. Okay. Development goals. So that's another good thing. Okay. We see from this policy. Now, when you look at the policy, what are the concerning things? Okay. So look at the policy as well. And these are things that I think our policymakers should be also looking at and think about. So the concerning things about this policy is that it's short on specific about implementation timelines and budget. All right. It doesn't, you know, in terms of timeline, and that's where we end up with others that we are, how many? The 2002, the 2001 policy, we end up 23 years and there's nothing happened. The implementation timeline and budget. So because this is an expensive exercise, you can't just throw it out there. It's an expensive exercise. And that's why we haven't been successful. If at least you can provide, you know, be specific about timelines, implementation timelines, and budget, then you become more realistic. Yeah? Because as I asked earlier, where do you gonna get money? Give us the budget, where are you gonna get the money? Now, the other concerning thing is that it doesn't address what happens to failing existing resettlement farms. So we have many of them that have failed. So what happened to them? So we just ignore that and then allocate new one? So this is another concerning, that it doesn't address what happened to those failing existing resettlement farms. So I think it's lacking in there. So we don't know what's going to happen. Instead of now, why don't you revamp, work on the one that are failing to make it more successful rather than allocate new one, go and buy a new one. You understand? I think it's more silent on that. So the other thing, the other concerning thing is political allocation. The political allocation risk remain unaddressed. Okay? So because it's still there. Okay? So those are some of the things that are not very clear, are concerning. The other concerning thing is the climate adaptation. You know, climate adaptation seems like an afterthought rather than a core principle, you know? You know, those things you throw in, you know, because everybody talks about it. So rather than actually this is a core principle. And I see that we don't pay attention to that. Eh? We really don't. And I realize that with where I am, it's where you now, you don't have many, you're not even a farmer to that extent, and you realize, we need to think more about this. And when we plan thinking about this. I hope you have MPs, some MPs that are listening. Okay? So the other thing concerning is no mention of anti-corruption mechanism of land distribution. Yeah? There's no mention. And if you are an MP looking at this, at this policy, no mention of anti-corruption mechanism of land distribution. Nothing. Yeah? I think that's a concern. It's something that is very concerning. Now, the things that are missing, when you're looking at that, what are the things that are missing? Clearly, targets for youth participation mentioned, but what are the targets for youth participation? It's not mentioned. That's missing. It's absolutely missing. Now, the other things that is missing is a strategy for dealing with white farm resistant or buy-in. That has been an issue for years. What have we done? Eh? What have we done so far? Nothing. There's no strategy, because one thing that why we hasn't moved, because there was no white farmers buying in, willing seller, willing buyer, willing seller. Is there any strategy, or you just, what are you going to do? Because that continues. If that continues, what are you going to do? You have a nice policy, but how do you want to acquire the land that you want if there's already resistance and there's no buying in into the policy? Strategy, that is still not addressing that. And I think that's something that they need to pay attention to. Yeah? And the other something that is missing is also honest assessment of physical strain. How much have we really spent? And how much is there? I know that we're looking at now how productive, you know, it's not just looking how many farms that we have, how many people that we resettle, but now looking at, is it productive? Is it actually creating job? Is it reducing poverty? Yes, but still the assessment, an honest assessment of physical constraint. Eh? Do we have money to do this? Is the right thing to do? I can understand that, but do we have money to do this? So even the other thing that is missing is the plan for rehabilitating degraded resettlement land. That's not there. So are we just going to give up and we focus on the new? That, it doesn't sit well with me, and I shouldn't sit well with many people. There is no plan for rehabilitating, you know, degraded resettlement land. There is nothing in the revised plan. And also mechanism for community monitoring and feedback. Yeah? So it shouldn't be the old way of just, okay, there you go, and you are on your own. There must be a mechanism of, you know, community monitoring and feedback, because that helps us now to How does that help us? That would help us actually how we move forward. Eh? That would help us how we move forward. All right. So look, I want this policy to succeed. I really want this policy to succeed. Every Namibian should want it to succeed. Eh? Because when land reform works, it transforms lives. Eh? It would transform lives. Eh? It would create, it creates, as we have been talking about, it would create a commercial, you know, black commercial farming class, which we really don't have much, you know. The other thing is that the policy would help them to produce food locally instead of importing it. It all would address this if it's implemented. It gives young people a reason to stay in rural areas instead of actually crowding into Windhoek's informal settlements looking for non-existent jobs. They come to Windhoek looking for non-existent job in Windhoek. So this would help then young people from rural area to stay in those because, you know, there's reason to stay. But there's also a difference between wanting something to work, it doesn't make it work. You understand? You may have this policy nicely done and whatever, and you kind of, I want it to work. As I said, I want it to work. You probably want it to work. But wanting it to work, it doesn't make it work. And Namibia's track record, our track record on implementing beautiful policies, let it call what it is, man. We are very, very bad. Eh? We're not good at all. Eh? So our track record is not good. So that's why I said wanting it to work, it doesn't make it work. You know, someone needs to make sure that it's happening. You remember what I said? You know, so the technical how it addresses the how, but not can we do it? Kind of like, can we do it part? So now, from now on, I think there are certain things that we should be watching on. Yeah. You and I, as a citizen of this country and everybody, and we should be, these are things that we should be watching in coming month. You know, so what we want to see is budget allocations. So we should watch if now this is a policy, eh? Let's look if there will be a budget allocation to this. Will the Ministry of Finance actually put serious money behind this? Or is just a tokela, as we say, eh? As the Chinese would say. Or is it just another unfunded mandate? We have a policy that is not funded. Eh? It's an unfunded mandate. So that's one thing that we need to look at. Let's see if we are serious about that. Put your money where your mouth is. That's exactly what it is. Eh? Put your money where your mouth is. Now, the other things that we should be watching it is first allocation under the new system. Who gets land? Eh? So let's also look who get land. What is the process? Is it transparent? That's another thing that we need to watch out. Who gets land? What is the process? Is it transparent? So now, and then there has been talk of the support in the new system, in the new policy. Support services now roll out. Okay. Do farmers actually start receiving training? Those are the things that tangible things that we need to start seeing. Do farmers actually start receiving training? Do they start to get extension help? Or does that get delayed due to capacity constraint? So these are things that we need to look at. Yeah. We hear all this, we clap hands on the Polish launch, and that's it. Let's start looking. I'm bringing up some of these things for us now, as because this is to our benefit. And if we are not holding, leaders accountable or people who are doing this, we are not doing justice to ourselves. Huh? We are not doing justice to ourselves. The other thing that I want to see is a convention to freehold now, from leasehold right to freehold. Does anyone actually make it from a leasehold to ownership? We want to see that. Oh, and who actually, who actually make it? Look at the people who make it. Eh? Or does that promises disappear into bureaucratic, into bureaucracy? You hear it? Now we want to see it. We want now to see that happening, that, yeah, the people who have been farming successfully, and now, you know, they own those farms. So we want to see that conversion. We want to see that conversion from leasehold to ownership. And I think also, which is not spoken, is the existing farm rehabilitation. We want to see also, let's watch also that, what happens to the 100 of struggling resettlement farm already allocated. What happened to those? We want to see something happening. So we want to see something happen. So now, I think land reform in Namibia, as we come to the end of this, it's not a policy issue. I would say it's not a policy issue. It is a test of our nationhood. I will put it that way. It's a test of our nationhood. Can we, 36 years after independence, finally address the historical injustice? Can we, can someone really, eh? Can we address the historical injustice of land disposition that has took place in this country in a way that create rather than destroy? We want to do it that, let's do it in the way that creates rather than destroy. That in a way that produces rather than actually make us die of hunger. I don't want us to go the Zimbabwean way. Okay? And I'm going to put it in this way. Can we include the previous excluded without excluding those who currently produce? You understand what I mean? If you can follow, I'm putting it more politically. Okay. Can we include, you know, can we include, I'm just checking if there was something. Okay, quickly. So can we include the previous excluded, eh, without excluding those who currently produce? Can we balance justice with, you know, with practicality? Yeah, because we don't want to go hungry here. Okay? So now, the new policy gives us a framework. Okay? It gives us a framework, but framework don't farm land. It's a framework. It doesn't do. People do. And those people need more than document and speeches. We need more. Okay? They need resources. They need support. They need training. They need fair processes. And they need time. So to the government, I say we are watching. It's not a threat, and this is what I want. I'm just saying for you as a listeners, we should be watching. We are not just applauding at launches. Okay. No, we are going to check if this makes a real difference in people's lives, and that's what we do here. We just not just applaud. Oh, this is a new. That's why we're looking at this. There was a launch of that. We're going to. We tease it out for you to understand what are the issues. So we will be watching here on Unpacking. And we want you to watch wherever you find yourself. To my fellow citizens, I say, engage. Eh? Don't just complain from the sidelines. Okay? Understand what this policy says. Any other policy. And even if you understand, apply if you qualify as well. Okay? You must also apply if you qualify. Demand transparency. Demand transparency. Report corruption. Eh? Hold leaders accountable. And to the young people listening, your country needs you. I'm not being political here now. Agriculture is not a backward career. So it is the future. I can tell you agriculture is the future. Eh? With climate change threatening global food system, you know, country that can feed themselves will thrive. That's what our founding father used to say. So countries that can feed itself will thrive. Those that can't will suffer. And I think at this point in time, we fall in that category because we import almost everything. Eh? So we have the land. We have the sun. We have the people willing to work. Eh? What we haven't had is the right policies fully implemented. That's what we haven't had. So maybe, just maybe, eh? Just maybe, this is a step in the right direction. Maybe. Okay? Or maybe it's another beautiful written document that gather dust while the wait list grow longer. All right. Time will tell. I think time will tell. And on this show, we'll keep telling it like it is. It's not a Namibian. but we will keep telling it like it is. All right. So that's bring us to the end for our of unpacking the day today. I think Tate Franz is desperately waiting. Okay, so yeah, let me say my goodbyes and let me leave you into a capable hand of Tate Franz, so who's coming up with the Kutha Mosha. From me, Mike Oshaveli, I wish you a beautiful day. Let's do this again tomorrow at the same time. So on your favorite 24/7 talk radio stations. Goodbye and have a great day ahead. And